today on Annenberg Radio News. Starbucks has another trick up its sleeve, but will customers buy it? Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Monday, September 22, 2014. I'm Charlie McGovern. Mayors from across the U.S. are working together to fight climate change. They met in New York today to begin talks. Kylie Morgan spoke with environmental advocacy groups in Los Angeles about their plan.
Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, along with mayors from Philadelphia and Houston, are developing an initiative to address climate change. Their plan will have cities better identify sources of pollution and reduce greenhouse gases. Jonathan Parfrey from the advocacy group Climate Resolve says several cities are already on board.
The mayors of New York, Chicago, Toronto, Boston have all committed to reducing greenhouse gas emissions to 80% below that of 1990 emissions by the year 2050. And they've committed to do that for every sector within their city.
Garcetti has already pushed for green projects in L.A., like a larger budget to restore the L.A. River. Parfrey hopes that the mayor will continue to take a strong stance on the environment.
Anything shy of that 80% by reduction by 2050 will not be as robust as that of other cities.
If the plan improves sustainability in Los Angeles, Jorge Madrid from the Environmental Defense Fund says LA could pave the way for other cities to do the same.
Los Angeles is one of the largest cities in the United States, one of the largest economies in the world. So we have all kinds of different challenges, but lots of opportunity for solutions. And I think that LA is the kind of place where if you can prove that it's doable in a city like Los Angeles, it's scalable and applicable in other parts of the world.
The mayors hope to recruit other cities to reduce pollution. Pollution will also be a key topic at a UN climate summit tomorrow in New York. Kylie Morgan, Annenberg Radio News.
Covered California recently failed to send insurance applications for 20,000 people to health plans, causing delays and confusion over their coverage. Another 10,000 people have had their insurance coverage canceled prematurely because they were eligible for Medi-Cal based on their income. At the same time, Covered California has been contacting nearly 100,000 households that risked losing coverage if they didn't provide proof of citizenship or legal residency. Apple's new iPhone has been on the market for 3 days. Alana Bracken takes a look at how sales are doing.
If you didn't buy an iPhone 6 this weekend, odds are you probably know someone who did. Apple announced today it sold more than 10 million of the new iPhone 6 in its first 3 days on the market. These numbers top last year's initial sales of the iPhone 5S, which hit only 9 million phones the opening weekend. Some analysts think the iPhone 6 sold more because wireless companies are offering consumers good deals. At Verizon Wireless, customers receive a $200 gift card for turning in older iPhone models. iPhone 5S trade-ins cash out at $300. LA Times technology reporter Paresh Dave thinks it's smart marketing by the cell phone companies.
I think cell phone companies realize that they can take advantage of that loyalty that Apple has engendered from its users and take advantage of that and, you know, get those old phones and then refurbish them, sell them for cheaper in developing markets, and then take advantage of that loyalty to get people to buy another iPhone.
Along with the iPhone 6, Apple released an even larger iPhone 6 Plus. It boasts a 5.5-inch display, and it sold out this weekend even faster than its smaller counterpart.
There have been rumors throughout the summer when, you know, word started to leak that Apple was working on a big iPhone, that there would be supply issues.
Apple's chief executive Tim Cook confirmed these rumors this morning. He said sales would have been higher had Apple been able to manufacture more phones in time for the release date. Apple plans to provide for the high demand, especially when it's released later this year in China, one of the strongest markets in the world.
There are significant improvements from the folks that have iPhone 4s from 2 years ago. Apple has convinced people that it's worth staying in the Apple ecosystem.
Dave expects high sales of the iPhone 6 to continue upwards through the holiday season. Alana Bracken, Annenberg Radio News.
New billboards will soon appear across the city featuring a hotline for human trafficking victims. Dana Beth Solomon was downtown when the project was launched this morning.
Flora Molina was once forced to work up to 19 hours a day in a factory. She had to sleep there each night, and during the day, she could only take one meal break for 10 minutes. Eventually, she fled with the help of CAST, the Coalition to Abolish Slavery and Trafficking. Today, that group joined with LA County officials to unveil a billboard campaign encouraging victims to seek assistance. Their message? That the first step to escaping human trafficking could be as simple as a phone call.
That there is help for them to get out of this very horrific life.
That was Supervisor Don Canabe, saying victims need to know they have options. While human trafficking can affect all sorts of people forced into various kinds of labor, sex trafficking presents unique challenges. Part of Canabe's solution is to not criminalize the young women forced into prostitution.
We must stop referring to these children as prostitutes or child prostitutes.
That's why Bradley Miles believes it's crucial to engage the public with campaigns like the billboards. His organization, Polaris, operates a 24/7 national hotline. Around 100 people call in every day. Still, he said less than 1% of those people enduring forced labor are able to call in to get help.
So we as a community, we can do better. We have the technology, we have the tools, we have the political will.
California passed a bill in August that gives stiffer fines and longer jail times to the people who knowingly solicit children prostitutes. And another bill is on the governor's desk that would create new training programs for officials so that kids can get the services they need. Dana Beth Solomon, Annenberg Radio News.
Starbucks is known for its seasonal beverages, and this year, it has something new up its sleeve. Here's Rania Niftos with the story.
Autumn is officially here, and Starbucks is selling a new fall-inspired drink. This one is a little different than what you might expect. The new dark barrel latte is topped with flavored syrup that makes the coffee taste like Guinness, the well-known Irish beer. Yes, you heard that right, beer-flavored coffee. The question that everyone's asking is, will the dark barrel latte be like the popular pumpkin spice latte?
Part of the fun is to bring it out in the fall.
Coffee expert Kevin Sinnott is the founder of the Coffee Companion, a guide to finding the best brewed coffee.
And it certainly, of course, the pumpkin spice lattes are have a special kind of Halloween symbolism to them. But I think the idea of a dark barrel latte is undeniably intriguing. I have to admit, if I were in a Starbucks today and they had it, I would be forced to try it.
Sinnott thinks the new drink will be a hit with the Starbucks customers. He says alcohol and coffee are the two tastes that people love, so why not put them together?
Got a lot of different things going here. We get whipped cream, a dark caramel sauce, and flavored coffee syrup. I mean, those are things that they all involve a certain kind of unique texture. And if, you know, someone's combined them properly, I mean, it should be a winner.
People on social media who have already tried it have opinions that range from loving it to hating it. Some at the local Starbucks on Figueroa were skeptical.
If I would drink beer, I would drink it for the alcohol content, not for the taste.
But others thought it could be a good idea.
I tried. It's interesting. New flavor.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be a bunch of businessmen now going to work with beer breath in the morning.
Yeah.
Which will be funny.
Love it or hate it, Sinnott says that we should be open-minded when trying the new drink.
The point on this is how fun it is to try these things together. It's we enjoy trying different tastes, you know, in combination.
It is unclear when the dark barrel latte will be for sale in California, but they are currently available to test at certain Starbucks stores in Ohio and Florida. Rania Niftos, Annenberg Radio News.
A Pew Research study today had some interesting findings on how Americans view religion. Jenna Pittaway takes a closer look.
A Pew survey released today found that 3/4 of Americans believe religion is becoming less influential in American life. Varun Soni is the dean of religious life at USC, and he says that it's not just our perception that's changing.
The religious demographics of the United States are changing quite dramatically. I think the big news over the last 5 years is the rise of the non-affiliated demographic, those who do not affiliate with any formal religious tradition.
This decline in religious affiliation has some Americans worried. The study also revealed that about half of Americans think that churches and religious institutions need to be more vocal in the political sphere. But what about the separation of church and state?
Most people assume that that language is in the Constitution, but that language of a wall separation is not in the Constitution. That actually comes out of a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to a friend of his, and it's extra constitutional.
The study also found that the number of people who think President Obama is unfriendly to religion has almost doubled. Sony says that while the demographic shift is real, this perception is not.
To me, it doesn't seem like there's anything that this administration has done any differently than previous administrations in terms of its engagement with religion.
Another myth Sony debunks is that unaffiliated means unreligious.
Amongst the non-affiliated, the 20% of Americans who are not affiliated, only 2% are atheists. So most of the people who aren't affiliated are still thinking deeply about meaning and purpose, about God. They're just doing it in a different way.
Sony says the campus demographics match the findings in the study, except in the case of international students. He says their interest in organized religion is actually growing. Jenna Pittaway, Annenberg Radio News.
Later on Annenberg Radio News, Alibaba was the biggest IPO of the year, but will it be a long-term winner? Stay tuned for my interview with Melissa Yang of the Los Angeles Business Journal. Two violins, one viola, and one cello improvised at the Little Tokyo Jazz Club Blue Whale last Friday. Anna Gonzalez was there for the release of the quartet's new CD, Music for Dreams.
Thanks again for coming to the Blue Whale. Please join us in welcoming Quartetto Fantastico CD release.
We're performing tonight at a venue in Little Tokyo. It's called the Blue Whale. And this is my personal favorite venue in Los Angeles. Our group is called Quartetto Fantastico. We improvise. My name is Miguel Atwood Ferguson. I started the group and created the group 7 years ago, and I play viola.
All the music is improvisation. And so the way that we react to each other, we react to our environment and to our original intention, that's what we represent in this CD.
I think the Blue Whale is one of like the best spots here in Los Angeles. And not such a cool collective community. You see the same people on the patios, you know, and like, that's like the foundation for it, but once you get to the music, you know, the music's really amazing, and like they give space for real experimental sounds, real beautiful frequencies to come out.
I love that they create and what they feel, so we definitely get that as the audience and fans.
The Blue Whale will continue hosting performances tonight with the Angel City Jazz Festival. We are all familiar with Googling something. Conceptual poet Vanessa Place makes Googling an art by appropriating search results within her performance. Vanessa Wilson spoke with Place at Mocha's Step and Repeat.
My poetry is what's considered to be conceptual poetry. In traditional poetry, the poet performs the role of the ventriloquist and speaks through others. I'm more the ventriloquist dummy, so others speak through me.
As James Franco knows, poetry makes me feel like I can create whatever I want.
I Googled poetry makes me feel, which seems like a pretty common way that people think about poetry, and then just did the Google search results and put those texts together with the introduction, as James Franco knows. Because obviously he must know something about how poetry affects people in order to have it touch so very many people.
As James Franco knows, poetry makes me feel like I talked to him yesterday.
Not only has the temperature been dropping, but the prices at the pump as well. Kevin Mallory checks out why.
AAA says drivers in Los Angeles are paying an average of $3.74 per gallon for unleaded gas, down 11 cents from a month ago. This could be due to the decrease in crude oil prices over the last several months. Brent crude is a type of oil that's used as a benchmark for other crude oil prices. Bloomberg recently reported that Brent crude fell below $100 a barrel for the first time in over a year. Frank Wolak is director of the Program on Energy and Sustainable Development at Stanford University. He says different factors contributed to this drop.
There's been a tremendous increase in the production of shale gas, as well as there's been a significant increase in U.S. Oil production.
The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, recently announced its plan to cut the oil supply in 2015. OPEC is responsible for about 40% of the global oil supply. While this would conceivably help the OPEC members balance their budget, Wolak believes that OPEC must continue to walk a fine line.
They want to keep the price up, but they don't want the price to be up too high, or else people will switch to alternative sources.
There's also been a decrease in demand for oil from struggling economies like China and Japan. This dent in demand has produced an oil surplus on the global market, helping push down the price of oil.
The economies are not, if you like, in high gear. All of the U.S., Europe, etc. That certainly helps. The fact that one of the upsides of a recession is a reduced demand for oil. That certainly is true. So the reduced demand for oil is going to make it more difficult for OPEC to keep the price up.
Because markets like China, India, and Africa demand the greatest amounts of oil and are still in the midst of an economic recovery, an oil price recovery remains to be seen. Kevin Mallory, Annenberg Radio News.
On Friday, Chinese online commerce conglomerate Alibaba made its highly anticipated initial public offering on the New York Stock Exchange. Today, they got even bigger after underwriters purchased an additional 48 million shares from the company at $68 each. The purchases brought the company's total IPO to $25 billion, making it the largest in history. And we're here with Melissa Yang, online tech reporter for the Los Angeles Business Journal. We're here talking about Alibaba. Now, this IPO was originally turned down in China, and then they had to go to the U.S., and now they're on the New York Stock Exchange.
So Alibaba actually did go public back in 2007. Alibaba.com went public on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange at the peak of the market. And, 5 years after that, Jack Ma, who was the founder, he took the company back to being private. And it was a lot of different factors, some of them being that there was a trading scandal that saw two of the top people leave the company. There was disappointing earnings. I mean, it was just a bad economic time in 2000. By the time it was 2012, so they took it off. And then they decided to put it on the New York Stock Exchange, which is a big deal because of the fact that competing with the NASDAQ stock market, a lot of tech companies have been going to the New York Stock Exchange.
And is there something about the New York Stock Exchange that is attractive to a tech company?
I think the fact that these companies want to be big players with other ones too. So when you have a stock exchange that is already attracting your fellow competitors on there, it's a direct competition with them.
Now, one of the major buyers of this IPO was Yahoo.
So Yahoo acquired its Alibaba stake in 2005 for $1 billion. And that was about a 22-23% stake in the company. And so with Friday's IPO, they likely made about $8.3 to $9.5 billion. And after taxes, their cash stockpile will probably be about $3.1 billion richer. What this IPO does for Yahoo is that it really is able to free up a lot of money for them to kind of continue their progression, hopes of really competing with Google and also being a media powerhouse.
Now that Alibaba is fully out on the market, there has been a lot of debate over just how big they're going to get. Some are saying that they're going to be bigger than Walmart. What do you think about that? How how much growth do you think Alibaba is going to see?
Friday, Jack Ma, again, the founder, he had said, you know, quote, we want to be bigger than Walmart, and that's the plan for them. There potentially could be. I mean, a lot of their business does come from China, which, you know, they make up about 80% of all online transactions in China. So by sheer volume itself, they're already doing more business than eBay and Amazon combined. In the U.S., there's still a lot of, as big as online transactions are, there's still a lot of dependence on brick and mortar stores. And especially since those brick and mortar stores like Walmart are already going online, it's kind of that niche for Alibaba to really dominate is a lot smaller than I think people might think.
What does a debut like this say about where the tech industry is going?
I mean, when you compare it to Facebook, Facebook's IPO was about $16 billion, just for reference, so you can kind of understand how huge this is. And for it to be a Chinese company coming to American markets is also showing how, you know, global this world is also becoming. It's not just about Silicon Valley anymore.
We've been talking with Melissa Yang, tech reporter for the LA Business Journal. Melissa, thank you for your time today.
Thanks.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
My family and I started a Chichen Itza restaurant here at Mercado La Paloma almost 14 years ago. I run the kitchen of Chichen Itza.
Ahí vas a estar con la chaya toda la tarde.
Cooking here at the Mercado lets us do the food that we want at an accessible price point. And the food that we do is what you would get if you go to Yucatan and someone invites you to eat to their home.
Sonic City!
The stock market took it on the chin today, with the S&P 500 suffering its biggest drop since early August. Lackluster housing numbers raised concerns on Wall Street that the economy isn't recovering at a fast enough rate. Investors were also uneasy after Chinese reports the second largest economy might be slowing down as well. And now we check in with Brad Stryker to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
All right, perfect. Tonight on ATVN, why it took crews 3 days to fix a water main break in LA. That's quite a bit of time considering the drought that we're in. And on a similar note, ATVN's Caitlin DeRocher investigates whether or not USC is doing their part to conserve water. And then finally, we bring you an interview with the much publicized Hearst owner at Lorenzo Apartments, being told that she cannot park there. Tune in tonight at 6 for all that and more.
All right, thanks, Brad. The TV show Friends is celebrating its 20th anniversary today. Sarah Zahedi took a look at the show's impact.
Well, that's it. I'm done. Whew. Oh, here come the meat sweats.
You're smoking again?
Well, actually, yesterday I was smoking again. Today I'm smoking still.
It's been 20 years since Friends premiered on September 22nd, 1994. But Chandler, Joey, Monica, Rachel, Phoebe, and Ross are still here for us. Even after the 10th season finale aired in 2004, Friends remained a fan favorite.
The show is so funny.
My favorite part of Friends, this is going way back, but it has to be when Monica and Chandler got married. And yeah, I love them all so much. Happy birthday, Friends.
I grew up watching Friends with my mom since I was, I don't know, as long as I can remember. So Friends has been a really part of my life.
I need to have a Friends marathon now.
Happy birthday, Friends.
Over the years, Friends received 62 Primetime Emmy nominations and continually ranked as one of the most popular shows on TV during its time on air. Mary Murphy is a senior lecturer at USC and a former producer for Entertainment Tonight. With the show's premiere racking 22 million viewers, Murphy says Friends had unique success.
Very few shows just come right out of the gate and are a hit. And Friends was a hit for 10 years.
Murphy says part of the show's success was its relatability to a wide audience.
Friends captured the essence of how kids getting out of college were moving into their adult life. It echoed or reflected the very lives of the people their age.
That's why Murphy says the show had a lasting impact on American pop culture. Viewers wanted to be friends with Chandler, Joey, Monica, Rachel, Phoebe, and Ross.
Each character on Friends was likable. They all had their flaws, but they were all likable.
And 20 years later, we still want to be friends. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News. I'll be there for you.
That's it for this Monday. We had help today from Gabrielle Cortez, Megan Coyle, Mary Kate Doherty, Karina Halajian, and Alana Victor. Our board operator is Derek Renfro. Sean Birch is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Andy Vasoyan. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Charlie McGovern.